Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, a part commentary from Chris Hedges, The Death of Truth. Then my guest, in the second part of our program, Dr. Joel Fuhrman on vegetarian, vegan, ecological lifestyles, how he has seen so many diseases simply reverse using lifestyle and vegetarianism. Our newsmaker of the day, talking about the New York State Bill A3525 and Senate Bill 3835 for mandatory labeling of GMO engineered foods to retailers in New York State, will be Kathleen Fury. We'll also talk about 7 dodgy food practices banned in Europe but used right here in the United States from Tom Philpott. That's our public health segment. Also today, we're going to do on our environmental segment why the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a very scary treaty. Kristen Beefus, the supersized NAFTA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, gives foreign corporations privileges that can override domestic and national laws on environmental health and citizens' rights. So here's why we shouldn't let this pass without a fight. And then in the New York Times today, on a front page, Foe suggests a trade-off if pipeline is approved. From John Broder, quote, President Obama's first major environmental decision of his second term could be the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline, profoundly disappointing environmental advocates who have made the project a symbolic test of the president's seriousness on climate change. But could some kind of deal be in the offing? A major climate policy announcement on, for example, power plant regulation or renewable energy incentives to ease the sting of the pipeline approval? I'll give you my input on why I believe this is just the wrong approach, but then I'll ask you for yours. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. We know that olive oil is good, and we also know that buying extra virgin organic olive oil is best. Here's one more reason why you should be consuming, I would say, about 1 to 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day. Very easy to do and delicious in the process. This is an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, and it says the following. Olive oil helps prevent strokes. Well, we know that millions, tens of millions of people every single day are eating more fruits and vegetables. They have a greater understanding of why chemical sprays should not be on their produce. They eat more beans than we do, like 10 times more beans, and they use different beans than what we would use. They eat more stews and bean soups than we do, by a big margin. They also have more tubers, root vegetables, a whole lot more garlic and onions and shallots and chives. They have a lot more seasoning than what we use in the United States, more fish, far less meat, sugar, desserts, refined carbohydrates. So, needless to say, the Mediterranean diet is considered a very healthy diet. This is from the University of Bordeaux and the National Institutes of Health, and here's what it says, quote, researchers were so excited by their results that they suggested a new set of dietary recommendations to prevent stroke, and stroke is very common, and they believe olive oil could be an inexpensive and easy way to help prevent stroke. They examined medical records of 7,625 people, and they found out that those who used the most olive oil had the least amount of strokes. So I would agree, but of course I don't believe we should be limited to just olive oil. That's one type of monounsaturated fat. I believe coconut oil and flaxseed oil, almond oil, walnut oil, and are all very important, also delicious in our culinary dishes. From Natural Society, Christina Sarich, the secret benefits of eating organic brown seaweed. And it's short, but I think it's very relevant. She is looking at the science behind seaweeds and also microscopic phytoplankton. And she says that this is like the ocean's lungs, and they account for a large amount of the oxygen in the environment as an important CO2 sink, meaning holding in carbon dioxide. They're also packed with folic acid, magnesium, iron, calcium, iodine, pantothenic acid, B6. But they're also filled with something else. A very important plant compound that has proven cancer-fighting qualities, which makes the sea vegetables not just a given one, but almost all of them beneficial. And these are the lignans, and they are extremely powerful in the body. Now, the brown seaweed, also known as kelp, has been found to prevent breast cancer. It changes our gut flora and allows for regular digestion, since the seaweed is composed of a large amount of insoluble fiber that must pass through the digestive tract. And this type of seaweed also thins the blood and is wonderful for preventing cardiovascular disease, including stroke. After all, one of the ways you help prevent a stroke is you, throughout the day, you continue to have things that are natural blood thinners. For example, every couple hours if you add vitamin C. That's great at thinning the blood and spacing the red blood cells so they don't clump together and aggregate, which can cause a clot. Vitamin E, tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10, any form of green vegetable. And really good would be green juices. So if every couple of hours you had maybe even a small amount, 4 ounces, 6 ounces of a green juice, you're thinning the blood and preventing a stroke. Now, most people are not aware that an awful lot of strokes and heart attacks happen in the middle of the night. My suggestion is, to help prevent that, that you take vitamin C and garlic and coenzyme Q10 about an hour before you go to bed. That way it's in your metabolism throughout the night, and that could help protect you from having a heart attack or stroke at night. But also, organic brown seaweed, aside from preventing breast cancer, which is great, it removes heavy metal. It's a natural chelator. It's been shown to get rid of a lot of toxic heavy metals in the body. But it also helps remove radioactive elements that create free radicals. It promotes weight loss. It's good on all levels. Also, magnesium intake helps create better bone density in children. This is from Baylor College of Medicine. And here is what it says. And why it's important. It says, parents are advised to make sure their children drink milk and eat other calcium-rich foods to build strong bones. But they're not urging their kids to take in magnesium. And yet it's magnesium that plays an important role in bone health, according to a latest study in Pediatric Academic Society's annual meeting. Quote, lots of nutrients are key for children to have healthy bones. One of these appears to be magnesium. This is the professor of pediatrics at Baylor College. Calcium is important, but except for those children and adolescents with very low intakes, may not be more important than magnesium. Now, what is known is that magnesium is important for bone health in adults. Few studies have looked at whether magnesium intake and absorption are related to bone mineral content in young children. This study did that and found out that it is. So what would be at the top of my list of magnesium foods for kids? Kelp, very important. Kale, extremely beneficial. In fact, hijiki seaweed, just making, having a simple, I would say the best way would be a salad. Because when you rinse your seaweed, and all seaweed should be rinsed 3 times, and or put it in a bowl and fill the bowl up with water and agitate it and then rinse it, and then do that 3 times. Then steam your seaweed, maybe for about 5 minutes. That breaks open the cells. Then blanch it, meaning you throw cold water in, pour cold water for a few moments. Refrigerate it. Now, I like to marinate seaweeds. And one of the best marinade is you put in some oil, your favorite oil. Let's say it's olive oil. And then you put in, I like to put in mustard. So I'll baste the seaweed in mustard. And some, you can use natural organic relish. And some cayenne, black pepper, and let it sit overnight. And then the next day you mix that into a salad. And kids who are finicky eaters won't notice it because the condiments are really accenting the flavor. But you're getting the minerals in, including iodine, which is important for their thyroid gland. But you're also getting magnesium, which is so important for their bones and bone health. So that's good. Also, there's new research showing that painkiller usage is reduced by 50% with homeopathy. This was from Dana Ullman, a good educator in there, and did a study and showed that upwards of 50% of all chronic musculoskeletal disorders that are not benefited by pain medication can be helped with homeopathic remedies. And then it goes on to talk about the actual research. So the next time you're in chronic pain and nothing is working, then seek out a homeopathic physician. And finally, how to clean your arteries with one simple fruit. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis. And the fruit, pomegranate. Pomegranate is a juice, or like I like. I love eating the little orbs, the little pomegranate fruit, minus the skin. That is a delicious way of going. Or you can use the powder, if need be. But get the pomegranate in you, because atherosclerosis is a primary cause of death by heart attack, and also the progressive thickening of the coronary arteries caused by the accumulation of fatty materials known as atherosclerosis. So in this study, it reduced the level of oxidative stress, it reduced monocyte chemotactic protein 1, a chemical messenger associated with inflammation process in the arteries. It reduced lipid accumulation, which is fat in the heart muscle. It reduced macrophage infiltration of the heart muscle. It reduced the levels of monocyte, which causes fibrosis in the myocardium. So on all levels, it was good. But we already knew that it was anti-inflammatory. It lowers blood pressure. It's a great antioxidant. So on all levels, pomegranate is good. One other thing. I've mentioned Manuka honey as the finest honey, the best medicinal honey in the world. Here's one more reason to use it. This is the latest research on Manuka honey. And here's what it has to say. Quote, with life-threatening instances of methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, infections on the rise, many are seeking safe and effective alternatives in the realm of natural medicine. Manuka oil is a shining example. Reports of the healing attributed to the oil are becoming more commonplace, oftentimes in cases where patients have suffered from MRSA boils, lesions, and open wounds that did not respond to antibiotic treatments. Extracted from the leaves and branches of the manuka tree native to New Zealand, this essential oil not only conquers deadly bacterial infections, but also relieves a host of other ailments, including eczema. It is a potent healer. This is the manuka, M-A-N-U-K-A, manuka oil. And then it goes on to talk about why it's so good and how it actually kills the MRSA bacteria that can migrate from the skin to the muscles and bones and heart and brain, and that can cause you to die and does each day. So that's good. Excellent. That we have so much information and so many ways that we can keep ourselves healthy. Now, to our segment here, I want to address my concerns about making a deal on the environment. Here's why I'm opposed to what some people were suggesting would be the Obama administration is going to go ahead. He is going to support the Keystone Pipeline, and gee whiz, we're all so disappointed. Well, why are you disappointed? Why? Obama only became president because he was first made a senator, and he was selected by Mrs. Pritzker, the Pritzker family. And she had run a bank, and it had gone broke, and hundreds of millions of dollars lost, but she made money on the deal. She's a multi-billionaire. She selected him and financed him and was the top money giver to him when he was an unknown to become a state senator in Illinois. Then she sponsored him in getting into the U.S. Senate, again a major sponsor. He's returning the favor now by making her head of labor. That's the worst thing in the world, but every one of his choices have been pro-corporate choices. He has not made a single choice that any reasonable person can say is a progressive or caring about the people or populist. Now, don't confuse some of the corporate liberals or corporate Democrats that he has appointed with being true progressives and for the people. He was pro-coal, heavily financed by the coal industry, major clients of his when he was in private practice. He was a pro-nuclear. In fact, the nuclear industry's biggest nuclear facility was financing him. Hence, he was making us believe that nuclear was a part of a sustainable energy. And, of course, he had already been pro-gas hydrofracking and pro-oil. He was forced to be even thinking about alternative energy. He has not even mentioned wave power at all, nor any of the tens of thousands of hot springs in the United States, and some are massive and could heat whole cities with geothermal. He has not looked at the viability of putting on a national level, not through private corporations, not through these corrupt private government partnerships, which are always to the benefit of the private sector and always against the people, but as a national Marshall Plan to do federal programs to put generators into the oceans, major wind towers in the Rockies so they're away from people where they would become a problem, and then tap into all the hot springs. Of course, you've got the giant deserts, and you've got deserts now in three parts of the United States that could handle thousands of miles in all directions and be an endless source. And what we do fund, and this is the mistake a lot of people make, they fund people who are in a positive association with them, almost always because someone gets a big contract, a government contract that we pay for, because they're political connections and political contributions, not because they're the best company to be doing it. So why should anybody be surprised by his position? But when you say, let's make a deal, understand what you're really doing. You're saying that you have never once in your career showed that you cared about the environment. Even your representatives to each of the environmental conferences each year have never signed on to anything. And they give these nice statements about we're all concerned about our environment, but then you don't do anything. We're concerned about the working person. Then they go behind their back and continue to support NAFTA, which is anti-labor, anti-union. And here's the wonder of unions. You can be pro-union, which I am, But I'm adamantly opposed to the union leadership in most cases because it's sold out. It's corrupt. Unions are all the time selling out their own membership. It's about sociopathic behavior. You get anyone in a position to use their power to help themselves, and almost always they do. But because they're so cunning and because they're such master Machiavellian characters, they can make you believe that it's all in their, at their behest you're doing this. It's not. So when you have a person that has protected the banks, protected Wall Street, not had any of the major money laundering banks that laundered hundreds of billions of dollars in drug money go to jail, instead doubling down on people who want to use marijuana in states where it's legal, and now want to take away those rights to put them in jail because they've created partnerships with the people who've given them money or part of their circle, the private prison population. Everywhere you look, there's just never once has anyone done anything right on behalf of the people. And if you think they have, if you come show me they have, please call in and share it. Because I've looked. Everywhere I look, I see groups of people who are very bright and consider themselves entitled, have never said they're sorry for any of their screw-ups or who they support and what consequences the rest of it. These are classic sociopaths, all of them, in all industries, in all institutions. They're all corrupt because that's what power does. And then behind them are legions wanting their chance to show that they can even outdo those that already have ruined everything. So this is not a pretty picture the way power is used in our country. They've taken away the Constitution. They've taken away the Bill of Rights. They've taken away our rights. They're trying to give rights to kids to decide for themselves as young children. They could get vaccinated without parental consent. They want to take away all of the laws that protected our water, our soil, our food. They want to control food. You can't be that stupid. I guess you can. If you want to live in denial of how bad the policies are, then do so. But for the rest of us, we're not surprised. So all along I've been saying to the people who are opposed to the Keystone Pipeline, friends, you're fighting the whole battle wrong. Get away from going to the White House and getting yourself arrested. It's a momentary photo shoot if you have a celebrity, even one that no longer acts in anything. But what if there was no celebrity? Then there'd be no... You'd be like the tree falling in the woods. No one would know it happened. What if, on the other hand, you took all those hundreds of thousands of people who are concerned, and rightly so, about this pipeline, and you began a very specific boycott of the companies involved in their products, and demonstrate outside of the banks and ask people to take their money out of the banks and show by example that you've taken your money out of their bank, you've torn up their credit cards, you're not shopping in their box stores. That would have an impact. And that you don't need celebrities to do. Now you want to make some compromise. You want to feel good about yourself for having nothing happened and continue to believe, like so many legions of Nation magazine reading corporate liberals, that gee whiz, I'm sure Obama will do the right thing when the obstructionist Republicans get out of his way. He has done the right thing. I give President Obama credit for being the finest president in the history of America for the group who put him in power. He has not failed them once, not once. Obamacare, it's a fraud. His national security state, his fascism run amok, his Trans-Pacific partnership, his support of nuclear, his detention of citizens, his right to kill anyone anytime for any reason he deems without any due cause. That's perfection. And he has his supporters because they are all sociopathic parasites in the media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all these sellouts. They could have exposed him for what he was doing back in Chicago. I know what he did. Everyone, and anyone who has a brain who once looked, you could have seen this coming. You chose not to. You made the wrong choice. Okay. So you're going to make the wrong choice this time and say, gee whiz, throw us a bone. Tell us that that you're going to have stronger regulation on nuclear power. Yeah? The only regulation we want is to see every single nuclear power plant, all 104, closed down, decommissioned. If Germany could decommission their entire nuclear industry, so could the United States. That he's not going to do. Anything else? You walk away thinking, yeah, we got something. Well, to walk away thinking you got anything, you have got nothing. You've got just a bag full of promises that when you open up and look inside, there's nothing there. It's just hot air. That's my suggestion. Boycott is the only thing they can understand. But something else that the average American is not aware of is how far from the truth we are today. I want to share an abbreviated commentary by Chris Hedges from TruthDig. Here's what he has to say upon visiting recently Julian Assange in his Ecuadorian embassy in London. He says, Assange, Bradley Manning, and WikiLeaks, by making public in 2010 500,000 internal documents from the Pentagon and the State Department, along with the 2007 video of U.S. helicopter pilots nonchalantly gunning down Iraqi civilians, including children and two Reuters journalists, effectively exposed the empire's hypocrisy, indiscriminate violence, and its use of torture and lies and bribery, and crude tactics of intimidation. WikiLeaks shone a spotlight into the inner workings of empire, the most important role of a press, and for this it has become empire's prey. Those around the globe with the computer skills to search out the secrets of empire are now those whom empire fears most. If we lose this battle, if these rebels are defeated, it means the dark night of corporate totalitarianism. If we win, if the corporate state is unmasked, it can be destroyed. There are no divisions among government, departments, or the two major political parties over what should be Assange's fate. Quote, I think we should be clear here, WikiLeaks, and people that disseminate information to people like this are criminals, first and foremost, and I think that needs to be clear, end quote. Robert Gibbs, President Obama's press secretary. Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat, and then Senator Christopher Boyd, a Republican, said in a joint letter to the U.S. Attorney General calling for Assange's prosecution, quote, if Mr. Assange and his possible accomplices cannot be charged under the Espionage Act or any other applicable statute, please know that we stand ready and willing to support your efforts to close those gaps in the law, as you also mentioned, end quote. Republican Candace Miller, U.S. Representative from Michigan, said in the House, quote, it is time that Obama administration treats WikiLeaks for what it is, a terrorist organization whose continued operation threatens our security. Shut it down. Shut it down. It's time to shut down this terrorist website, WikiLeaks. Shut it down, Attorney General Holder, end quote. At least a dozen American governmental agencies, including the Pentagon, the FBI, the Army's Criminal Investigation Department, the Department of Justice, the Office of Director of National Intelligence, and the Diplomatic Security Service, are assigned to the WikiLeaks case, while the CIA and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence are assigned to track down WikiLeaks' supposed breaches of security. The global assault, which saw Australia threatened to revoke Assange's passport, is part of the terrifying metamorphosis of the war on terror into a wider war on civil liberties. It has become a hunt not for actual terrorists, but a hunt for all those with the ability to expose the mounting crimes of the power elite. The dragnet has swept up any person or organization that fits the profile of those with the technical skills and inclination to burrow into the archives of power and disseminate it to the public. It no longer matters if they have committed a crime. The group Anonymous, which has mounted cyber attacks on government agencies at the local and federal levels, Saul Barrett Brown, a journalist associated with Anonymous and who specializes in military and intelligence contractors, arrested along with Jeremy Hammond, a political activist alleged to have provided WikiLeaks with 5.5 million emails between the security firm Strategic Forecasting, also known as Stratfor, and his clients. Brown and Hammond were apparently seized because of allegations made by an informant named Hector Mansour, known as Cebu, who appears to have attempted to entrap WikiLeaks while under FBI supervision. To entrap and spy on activists, Washington has used an array of informants, including Adrian Lemo, who sold Bradley Manning out to the U.S. government. WikiLeaks collaborators or supporters are routinely stopped, often at international airports, and attempts are made to recruit them as informants. Jeremy Zimmerman, Smerry McCarthy, Jacob Applebaum, David House, and one of Assange's lawyers, Jennifer Robinson, all have been approached or interrogated. The tactics are often heavy-handed. McCarthy, an Icelander and WikiLeaks activist, was detained and extensively questioned when he entered the United States. Soon afterwards, three men who identified themselves as being from the FBI approached McCarthy in Washington. The men attempted to recruit him as an informant and gave him instruction on how to spy on WikiLeaks. On August 24, 2011, six FBI agents and two prosecutors landed in Iceland on a private jet. The team told the Icelandic government that it had discovered a plan by Anonymous to hack into Icelandic government computers, but it was soon clear the team had come with a very different agenda. The Americans spent the next few days in flagrant violation of Icelandic sovereignty interrogating Sigurdur Thordinson, a young WikiLeaks activist, in various hotel rooms. After the team was discovered by the Islamic Ministry of Interior and expelled from the country, the man was taken to Washington for 4 days for further interrogations. He appears to have decided to cooperate with the FBI. It was reported in the Icelandic press that he went to Denmark in 2012 and sold the FBI's stolen WikiLeaks computer hard drives for $5,000. There have been secret search orders for information from Internet service providers, including Twitter, Google, and Sonic, as well as seizure of information about Assange and WikiLeaks from the company Dynadot, a domain name registered and web host. And there is a well-orchestrated campaign of character assassination against Assange, including mischaracterizations of the sexual misconduct case brought against him by Swedish police. Assange has not formally been charged with a crime. The two women involved have not accused him of rape. Assange sought asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy after exhausting his fight to avoid extradition from the United Kingdom to Sweden. He and his lawyers say that an extradition to Sweden would mean an extradition to the United States. If Sweden refused to comply with U.S. demands for Assange, kidnapping or extraordinary rendition would remain an option for Washington. Kidnapping was given legal cover by a 1989 memorandum issued by the Justice Department stating that, quote, the FBI may use its statutory authority to investigate and arrest individuals for violating U.S. law, even if the FBI actions contravene customary international law, and that an arrest that is inconsistent with international or foreign law does not violate the Fourth Amendment, end quote. Well, that's a stunning example of the security and surveillance state's Orwellian doublespeak. The persecution of Assange and WikiLeaks and the practice of extraordinary rendition embody the shredding of the Fourth Amendment, which was designed to protect us from unreasonable searches and seizures and requires any warrant to be judicially sanctioned and supported by probable cause. In 1975, Henry Kissinger, during a conversation with U.S. Ambassador to Turkey and two Turkish Cypriot diplomats, assured his host that he would work around an official arms embargo then in effect. He is quoted in the document saying, quote, before the Freedom of Information Act, I used to say at meetings, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. But since the Freedom of Information Act, I'm afraid to say that now, end quote. By the way, these are the documents that now are public. The documents, along with detailing collaborations with the military dictatorships in Spain and Greece, show that Washington created a torture exemption to allow the military government in Brazil to receive U.S. aid. The documents were obtained from the National Archives and Record Administration and took a year to be prepared in an accessible digital format. Quote, it is essentially what Aaron Swartz was doing, making available documents that until now were hard to access or only obtainable through an intermediary. Schwartz was the internet activist arrested last year for downloading more than 5 million academic articles online on a clearinghouse for scholarly journals. Schwartz was charged by federal prosecutors with 2 counts of wire fraud and 11 violations of computer fraud and abuse. The charge carried $1 million in fine, 35 years in prison. Schwartz committed suicide shortly thereafter. So what is this all about? And then I go to the crux of it. Assange says, quote, the press of a nation at war in every conflict is an enthusiastic part of the machine, cheerleaders for slaughter and tireless mythmakers for war and the military. The few renegades within the press who refuse to wave the flag and slavishly lionize the troops, who will not endow them with a host of virtues including heroism, patriotism, and courage, find themselves pariahs in newsrooms and viciously attacked, like Assange and Manning, by the state. As a reporter at the New York Times, I was among those expected to prod sources inside the organs of power to provide information, including top-secret information. The Pentagon Papers, released to the Times 1971, and the Times Pulitzer Prize 2005 exposure of the warrantless wiretapping of U.S. citizens by the National Security Council, used top-secret documents, a classification more restricted than the lower-level secret designation of the documents released by WikiLeaks. But as the traditional press atrophies with dizzying speed, effectively emasculated by Barack Obama's use of the Espionage Act half a dozen times in 2008 to silence and jail government whistleblowers such as the former CIA official John Caracal, it is left to the renegades, people like Assange and Manning, to break down walls and inform the public. The cables that WikiLeaks released, as disturbing as they were, invariably put a pro-unit or pro-USA spin on events. The reality in war is usually much worse. Those counted as dead enemy combatants are often civilians. Military units write down their own after-action reports and therefore attempt to justify or hide their behavior. Despite the heated rhetoric of the state, no one has provided evidence that anything released by WikiLeaks costs lives. Then-Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, in a letter to Senator Carl Levin, conceded this point when he wrote, quote, the initial assessment in no way discounts the risk to national security. However, the review to date has not revealed any sensitive intelligence sources and methods compromised by the disclosure. The New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, and Der Spiegel giddily printed redacted copies of some of the WikiLeaks files and then promptly threw Assange and Manning to the sharks. It was not only morally repugnant, but also stunningly short-sighted. Do these news organizations believe that if the state shuts down organizations like WikiLeaks and imprisons Manning and Assange, traditional news outlets will be left alone? Can't they connect the dots between the prosecutions of government whistleblowers under the Espionage Act, warrantless wiretapping, monitoring of communications, and the persecution of Manning and Assange? Don't they worry that when the state finishes with Manning and Assange and WikiLeaks, these atrophied news outlets will be next? Haven't they realized that this is a war by a global corporate elite, not against an organization or an individual, but against the freedom of the press and democracy? In conclusion, I walked for a long time down Sloane Street after leaving the embassy. The red double-decker buses and the automobiles inched along the thoroughfare. I passed boutiques with window displays devoted to Prada, Giorgio Armani, and Gucci. I was jostled by shoppers with bags stuffed with high-end purchases. They, these consumers, seemed blissfully unaware of the tragedy unfolding a few blocks away. The world has been turned upside down. The pestilence of corporate totalitarianism is spreading rapidly over the earth. The criminals have seized power. It is not, in the end, simply Assange or Manning they want. It is all who dare to defy the official narrative, to expose the big lie of the global corporate state. The persecution of Assange and Manning is a harbinger of what is to come. The rise of a bitter world where criminals in Brooks Brothers suits and gangsters and in military uniforms, propped up by a vast internal and external security apparatus, a compliant press and a morally bankrupt political elite monitor and crush those who dissent. Writers, artists, actors, journalists, scientists, intellectuals, and workers will be forced to obey or thrown into bondage. I fear for Julian Assange. I fear for Blatting Many. I fear for all of us. Chris Hedges, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to our newsmaker guest for a very brief update on a piece of legislation, then to our main guest, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, talking about vegetarianism and how it helps us stay healthy. By the way, this Sunday will be the final opportunity for those of you who would just like to get yourself into shape, not necessarily run or walk the marathon, which many are going to be doing, but we're trying to get people in shape so that they can comfortably and easily go out and do a six-mile loop. So 90th Street and Fifth Avenue at 9 a.m. Now let's go over to my newsmaker, Kathleen Furry. She is the Education and Media Director of GMO Free New York, which is a grassroots coalition allied with the national coalition of 37 states to pass GMO labeling laws. She's a researcher for the award-winning documentary Genetic Roulette, directed by Jeffrey Smith. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks. Great to be here, Gary.
Tell us about the two bills that we should be concerned about in New York State.
Well, it's the Assembly bill is the A3525, and the Senate bill is S3835. And it's the same language for both bills. And the language has been amended from the original language that goes back to the original introduction of the bill many years ago now. And we are pushing real hard from GMO Free New York to get this passed. We have to get it out of committee. Currently, it's in the Consumer Affairs and Protection Committee in the Assembly side and the Consumer Affairs Committee, Consumer Protection Committee in the Senate side. So we are asking New Yorkers to get involved. It is going to be the labeling of genetically engineered foods that are offered for retail sale in the state of New York. It'll be mandating that. And we really need everybody to write letters, to make phone calls, especially to the committee members of the Consumer Affairs and Protection on the Assembly side and the
Do you have phone numbers, email addresses for the audience?
They can go right to our website and everything is there. It's GMOfreeny.net. It's the green and white logo of the state of New York. And all the actions are there. We're going to be doing actions every single day starting next week to get the snail mail letters are really, really important because they actually have to write a snail mail letter back. But emails are important, bombarding their offices with phone calls. Okay, because we only have until June 20th to get this voted on and passed.
Good. I'm asking all the people in this audience, if you care about having the food that is genetically modified labeled so you'll know, and you can have a freedom of choice to select it or not, then you'll want to go to GMOfreeny.net, GMOfreeny.net, and then contact your state representatives and tell them that you want to see the bills passed that label the food that is genetically engineered in New York.
I mean, we need them to subscribe so that we can actually get those action alerts right to them each day or each whatever
right.
number of days that we're sending
you'll,
them out.
You'll get a bunch of people today, Kathleen.
Okay, so it's GMOfreeny.net, the green and white logo of the state of New York. Really, really need everybody on board because we believe we have 40 co-sponsors on the Assembly side, which is exciting, but only one sponsor on the Senate side. So we need to really get more co-sponsors on the Senate side and move this thing to a vote. It's never been moved to a vote before.
Kathleen, how about doing this? Why don't you mail? I will send you the copies, a copy of our documentary, Seeds of Death, to every member of the state legislature.
Great. We'll have it on our website. I can get that to you right away.
Get us that right away, and we'll see that it gets to them, all right?
That'd be fantastic.
All the best to you.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you so much.
Now let's say hello to Dr. Joel Furman, F-U-H-R-M-A-N. He's a board-certified family physician practicing in Flemington, New Jersey. He specializes in preventing and reversing disease through nutrition and natural methods. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks, Gary. Great to be here.
Let's go through the most common diseases that you have seen improved or reverse with lifestyle and diet modification, and then try to give us the specifics of, as if someone were sitting across from you who had these conditions, the advice that you would give them.
Well, Gary, as you know, you and many people know, the most common diseases seen by in a doctor's office are pretty much the most common things that kill most Americans: overweightness, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, so heart disease, and you know, and atherosclerosis, leading to stroke and dementia. And, you know, those are typical things, you know, besides headaches, fatigue, allergies, asthma. But the general bread and butter for most doctors today is giving drugs for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. That's what, you know, what mostly general, you know, general practice and internists do. And in reality, the drugs make things worse, not better. They, first of all, they function as permission slips. They give people the subconscious and emotional support to keep living the same lifestyle and diet style that's caused the problem to begin with. But more than that, they actually add more dangers to the problem. Like, for example, when you give diabetic medications, the glucosinolates and the insulin are fat storage. They make you store fat and put on more weight and become more diabetic, and the glucosinolates make the failing beta cells in the pancreas work harder to produce insulin, accelerating their demise of those cells, leading you to become your diabetes to advance. In fact, the ACCORD study, which the government had to step in and stop, showed a 20% increased mortality, which means increased death, in the intervention group getting more medical care and better drug care to better control their glucoses. The point I'm making is that the more medical care you get, the more drugs you take, the better you see doctors to get your blood pressure down, your cholesterol down, and the diabetes down, the worse you get. We're not really, if we never had these drugs, people would be forced to make the dietary changes, and the exercise and diet would be their primary source of therapy, and then they'd be really getting well, not just covering up the problem by smoothing, you know, by wearing glasses so you can't see it happening anymore. But so take blood pressure medications. You know, they, first of all, lowering the diastolic into the favorable range too often pushes the, oh, I said that wrong, pushing the systolic, that's the top number, into the favorable range below 140. To do that most often requires more than one medication. And that makes the diastolic become too low in the unfavorable range. And a low diastolic is associated with increased risk of irregular heartbeat, atrial fibrillation, sudden cardiac death, and cardiac ischemia. In other words, we see more heart attack deaths as people are traditionally and routinely over-medicated with blood pressure medications. Take cholesterol-lowering drugs, which increase risk of diabetes, increase risk of having kidney failure, cause all types of other issues, and make people think that they're okay now that their cholesterol is more favorable. The point I'm making here, you know, stemming from your original question, is that we have to have a population that finally realizes they can take charge of their health destiny, but they got to be in control, not their doctors. They can't rely on medications to do it. They have to start eating differently, and they have to start getting in great shape, losing weight, and eating a diet style that's based on vegetables and fruits and nuts and beans and onions and mushrooms and tomatoes. In other words, if we, you know, we're talking here about a diet that's, that could be called vegan or flexitarian or near vegan, you know, with a little bit of animal products. But the point is that most vegetarian diets are still borderline nutritionally inadequate because people aren't still eating enough greens, and especially not eating enough green cruciferous vegetables. And they're not eating the seeds that have the omega-3 index in them, like the, you know, the flax seeds, the chia seeds. And even sesame seeds are high in those lignans that flax seeds and chia seeds have, linked to lower rates of breast cancer. The point I'm making is now is that I coined a word, I call it a nutritarian diet, to represent a diet that's either vegan or close to vegan that focuses on those foods with the most therapeutic disease reversal properties that can enable us to live a long, healthy life, to be, you know, 90 or 100 years old, free of the medical tragedies that befall most Americans.
Give us an example of a typical patient and what problems they had encountered before seeing you from typical physicians, and then what the results were after following a protocol.
Well, you know, so typically, because of, the nature of my practice, I often see people that are really in bad shape, that might be more sickly and have more dangerous conditions than a regular family physician or internist might see, because I'm not just seeing the local people who has their insurance, on their insurance doctor. I'm seeing people that travel to me from, all over the country that want my type of care or that, access me in some way. But in any case, a typical example, of somebody like that is, like a guy whose name is Ronnie Valentine, who had bypass surgery that clogged up again, and then he had, after 4 years, and then he was about 100 pounds overweight, and then he had angioplasty, triple angioplasty, that within a few weeks he had restenosis, which is eye iatrogenic scarring forming in the blood vessels that have been stretched. And again, he had terrible chest pains, couldn't move, almost a medical cripple, and they just about sent him home to die on 8 different medications. And over the next year, working with him, he lost the 100 pounds that he needed to lose. He got off all his 8 medications. His heart disease opened up. His blood pressure came back to normal. He couldn't control his blood pressure on the 3 medications he was given. It couldn't be, it was still unfavorable. But now, after a year, he's on no medications with no need for any blood pressure medications. He had no need for cholesterol lowering. His, LDL cholesterol was in his 80s without drugs. And of course, he was able to exercise and be functional again, and he's living life and looking fit and enjoying his life from being crippled. So I'm seeing, not only can we see that that nutritional excellence can prevent serious diseases, we see people after they've developed in advanced stages of these disease processes where medical care can't help them anymore. Now, through aggressive nutritional interventions, it can accomplish what medical care, surgical procedures cannot accomplish. We can actually get people well again. Gary, you may know I have a new book out called The End of Diabetes that diagrams my protocol for diabetes, and I did publish a study in a medical journal that documents that 90% of my patients who are on diabetic medications become non-diabetic, and this is type 2 diabetes. I'm saying they don't need medications anymore, and their glucose levels are in the favorable range. And I just want to say that when you achieve a glucose level in your favorable range without medications, that's what protects you. Having it pushed down into a favorable range with medications are not protective, because the medications have harmful effects on your future diet, on your future outcome. Well, and your future, it's a horse of a different color when you achieve a normal cholesterol without cholesterol-lowering drugs, when you achieve a normal blood pressure without blood pressure medications, and you will receive normal glucose or diabetic parameters without the need for diabetic medications. Then you know you're protected because you earned it, and I didn't just cover it up with a medication.
Good information. As always, thank you very much for sharing these insights. So much can be done if we shift over to a healthy lifestyle, including a vegan or close to a vegan diet. The book is The End of Diabetes, and the website is drfurman.com. Now time for TalkBack at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We were inundated all over the world with Skype yesterday, but I had an audio issue on my end that we're correcting so that the people Skyping can hear me. That'll be corrected shortly, so we can't Skype take calls today. I'm anxious to see that because, man, we were loaded. But we'll take your calls in just a moment. Now, our special of the day, this is it. Coenzyme Q10, 120 milligrams, 60 soft gel vegan capsules, and you get a big discount. The normal price would be $119.98. You're paying $49.99. You're paying a big discount, all right? And, of course, I don't have to tell you why you need Coenzyme Q10. You know what ubiquinone is. You know how important it is as an antioxidant, as an essential component of the mitochondria, the energy-producing unit of the body's cells. You know how important it is for overall health. So now you have it on sale. And it's from the finest Japanese source material, Coenzyme Q10. I take it every day. I take it 3 times a day. and it's on sale today for you at an enormous discount. Regularly $119.98, now it's only $49.99 for two bottles. Give a call at 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David, your turn.
Hi there. Yes, about your boycotting idea. What we need to enable the boycotting. Hello, are you there?
I'm here, David.
Okay, to boycott, you need a list of states, and alongside each state, a list of the major products that's made mostly only there. So we know what to boycott. Like for if they refuse to use DNA testing for death row people. Also, boycott Sweden. You know, tell people please don't visit Sweden. There's a lot of people in this country who are for Assange. They should not visit Sweden. That gets them in the pocket. Our biggest problem, of course, is the media. And the question is, like with this DNA labeling law. How in the world, when they own the media, can you fight them? Look at California. They won the thing. I don't know how you fight them.
Well,
beware. Government can kill websites. They can blame it on the Muslims learning how to build bombs and stuff in that Boston thing. Also, merely looking at a site, the Boston thing proves this, it can be considered evidence of you being terrorist-leaning. So it's really going to be difficult. They can really strike back at everybody.
Well, David, as you know, we have been educating the people every week on fascism in America, how we become a police state, and giving strong, specific, and scholarly evidence for that. But at the end of the day, we are about 10% of the American population. Not bad. That's over 30 million people. But it's only when we boycott, because of the 30 million people, I'm willing to bet that 99% of the people who have awakened are still supporting economically the 1%. That is the irony. So you've got to watch where you buy your clothes. You've got to watch with food you eat and only buy organic. You have to turn off their programs. You're right. We should be doing that, and it's a good idea. Now, why don't you do it? Don't look at us to do everything. Someone has to take the responsibility, and let's see if someone in this audience steps up and creates a list. Do it in a very simple way. Take items that we could all agree should be boycotted, or those of us who are progressive should be boycotted, and then let's start a campaign behind that. And see if we can take one item at a time. All right, you choose the item, and we'll put it out there. Thank you for your call. Looking at the clock, we're out of time, and I want to thank you all for listening. Luann Panessi, you got the final call here.
Okay, Gary. Well, I hope you never get tired of hearing this, but I had someone, John from New York City, as well as four other people, email me this. The International Agency for Research on Cancer has released its detailed evaluation of the cancer risks associated with radio frequency radiation, which serves as the rationale for designing radio frequency as a possible human carcinogen. They have directly related it to a spike in brain tumors, and this is all about the cell phone, and you were speaking about this, Gary, over 5 years ago, and this is what you're listening to.
12 years ago. Yeah. I said that
gliomas and acoustic neuromas.
Yeah, we're going to have an epidemic of cancer of the brain, but also ear cancers. We're going to have eye cancers. You're seeing it now. I look at all the different statistics. The people who are not informed, or the people who don't care, they're putting themselves at risk by just putting a cell phone up to their head. Hopefully I know the people in this audience certainly have that message, but we've got to share that with other people. And that's why take the information, take the articles that we post and send it out to other sites. Let's share information. That's how information, it becomes a powerful tool for people.
Thanks. And ironically, the strongest dissent came from Peter Inskip of the U.S. National Cancer Institute, who walked out on the meeting before the final vote. What about that?
Well, no, he had to. He would have had to. Remember, these people are instructed of what they can accept and what they must reject. They can't sit there and look like somehow by passively sitting there that could be considered in some as some form of tolerance or acceptance for the research outcome. All right? The same people that walked out of meetings, if you claim that cigarette smoking caused harm to the health, then people would have not accept that either. And let's go over and say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about terrorism from a different perspective. William Blum, a former State Department person who has spent the last almost 40 years writing about the State Department, is going to tell us about terrorism, redefining it. And we're going to follow through on yesterday's congressional hearing that actually produced evidence that the Republicans are on their way to filing an impeachment article against the president.
We look forward to it. Utrice Lead in a moment. Please stay with us.
You know I can't be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad, something I might have said.